From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Senate Independent Democratic Conference leader Senator Jeff Klein publicly responds to news reports that some of his members receive stipends for committee chair positions they didn't hold. Our political observer Alan Shartok speaks with Daily News Albany Bureau Chief Ken Lovett about the controversy over Lulus, and supporters from across New York gather to ask lawmakers to pass the Medical Aid in Dying Act. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Senator Jeff Klein, leader of the Senate Independent Democratic Conference, or IDC, for the first time this week publicly answered questions from the media about news stories that some of his members receive stipends for committee chair positions that they do not actually hold. Klein defended the practice while the leader of the Senate Democrats is calling for an investigation. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The senators received the stipends, known in Albany lingo as Lulus, for chairing the committees, even though they actually held the position of vice chair. There's no provision in state law for vice chairs to be paid additional funds. Senator Klein at first attempted to lighten the moment by joking about the attention the situation has attracted, which was first reported in the New York Times.
Well, welcome to Albany's version of Lululand. I mean, that's all we seem to talk about.
Senator Klein says it was within the law for the Senate Republican Majority Leader John Flanagan to determine who gets the stipends and to send paperwork seeking authorization to the state's controller. The Senate IDC leader denied that some of his members were taking money for chairmanships when they did not actually hold the posts. He grew testier as he explained that it's more complicated than that.
Well, that's nonsense because you're not a lawyer. And I think it's been very clear what happened was when a letter goes from the Senate president to the controller's office itemizing what each committee is, it's actually a coding where they actually put in the amount when that committee isn't being used.
Klein says the practice is permitted under the state's constitution. Senate Majority Leader Flanagan agrees.
I believe everything we've done in the past and right now is in full accordance with not only the constitution but the legislative law.
A legal opinion from the top counsel for the Senate Republicans backs up that view. Flanagan says the Republicans have a very good bipartisan working relationship with the IDC. And he says the breakaway Democrats, as well as some Senate Republicans who also received similar stipends, all deserve the money.
All the members, Democrat, Republican, Assembly, or Senate, are worthy of the compensation that they receive.
Despite that, one of the GOP senators, Senator Pam Helming of the Finger Lakes, has said she'll return her stipend. It was falsely paid to her as chair of the Crime and Corrections Committee when she is, in fact, the vice chair of that committee. Attorneys for the mainstream Senate Democrats, who are in the minority in that chamber, have a different interpretation of whether the payments were legal. They believe they were not. In a statement, Democratic Senate Leader Andrea Stork-Cousins called for an investigation, calling the payments obvious violations of state law. The two entities that hold the authority to investigate, the Albany County District Attorney and the state's Attorney General, aren't commenting. The Attorney General would need a referral from a third party in order to launch a probe. A spokesman for the Senate Republicans, Scott Reif, accused the Senate Democrats of playing politics, and he says the Senate should instead focus on the important work it needs to do before the session concludes in June. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
This week, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok sat down with Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, and spoke about the issue of Lulus in the news.
All the committee chairs in the Senate and the ranking Democrats get stipends, you know, thousands of dollars above their baseline salary.
So when they say to you, I make, $79,000 or whatever, that's baloney.
Well, yeah, in the Senate, everyone gets a stipend. And usually it can range from anywhere, if you're a Democrat, like $8,000, $9,000. If you're a Republican, it can go all the way up to $20,000, $30,000, depending on what the stipend is.
So let me get this straight. You come up, you show up on what, Monday afternoon, you're here for Tuesday, and then you go home. And then you argue, well, I have to see people in my district office. But, you know, I've known a lot of senators who, and others who don't meet anybody in their district offices. So they're working 1 or 2 days a week. And they're always bitching about how little money they get, $79,000, whatever it is. What is that?
$79,500.
And now they get extra money, up to $20,000 each for those same 2 days a week for banging down activities.
Well, and even more. I mean, if you're a leader, you can get 30-something thousand. But yes, but that's been going on for years. We all knew about it. What McKinley at the Times has wrote about last week, and what we've kind of expanded on, is that the John Flanagan, the Senate Majority Leader, has been giving stipends to members of the Independent Democratic Conference, which is a group of 8 breakaway Democrats. And
otherwise known, as I've often said, as the traitors.
And he's been giving them stipends, even though some of them, 3 of them, were not chairmen of committees. They were vice chairs. And there's nothing in law that says a vice chair can get a stipend. So what Flanagan's been doing has been, he has... If you are in the Senate or the Assembly, you could be in a leadership position, which brings you a stipend, and you can have a committee chair that brings you a stipend. But you can't take 2 stipends. You have to take the 1. So what's been happening, and which has been common over the years, is some committee chairs who also have leadership positions that pay more, they will take the leadership stipend. In the old days, that just meant that the committee stipend went unused. You know, okay, he's not taking it. It goes back into the state coffers. What they've been doing now is they said to a couple of IDC members, you can have the committee stipend as a vice chair. You can have the chairman stipend. And then what he also did this year for the first time was he said to a number of his upstate Republicans, we're also going to give you vice chair stipends that would have gone to the committee chairman. And what was interesting with some of the Republicans is they had their own committees, but they got more. For instance, there, you know, if you were on the education committee as a vice chair and you got the committee stipend, you got $18,000. The guy who has that as the vice chair had his own committee, but it was only a $12,000 stipend, $12,500. So he's actually getting like $5,500 more.
So let's say you're the head of the Republican conference. That's a leadership position, right?
That's a leadership position.
And you get more than if you were committee chairman.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's
and
the
big... And you can be a majority whip, and that gets more than a committee chair as well.
So this is piggery, right? Is that what this is
it is, but why this has raised a lot of questions is when they had submitted their payroll records to the state comptroller's office, the Senate, they said these are the stipends that need to be paid out. They had listed the 7 senators who were getting committee chairman stipends but were vice chairs. They listed them as committee chairs. That could be illegal.
Well, it might be illegal because, as you said, there's a law, L-A-W, that governs all of this, and that it doesn't say anything about vice chairs, only chairs.
Only chairs. And if you're saying someone's a chair and they're not, is that filing a false instrument, which, depending on the circumstance, could be a felony. The Senate lawyers say no. And, of course...
What do you mean, no?
That it's legal, that it's completely legal.
Well, how could it be legal?
They're saying that, by law, there's nothing stopping a vice chair from getting a stipend. It doesn't say they can, it doesn't say they can't. And that, basically, it's just an accounting maneuver to be able to pay them out.
Well, listen, Kent Lovett, why would you then have a law which specifically says you have to be a chair to get the money?
That is the question, and that's why some people are saying there should be an investigation.
Okay, so now let's go back to these guys in the Independent Democratic Conference. Again, if you're out there and you're listening and you want me to try to make this understandable and can make it understandable, what happens is that these people are in a position now to keep the Republicans in power, right? So it's terribly important to do that. But because the Democrats are waking up and because of rampant anti-Trump feelings in New York State, it looks like these guys in this independent breakaway conference, Democratic conference, who are also known as the traitors, are going to face primaries.
Yeah, already we know of one. I was joking. I wrote about how Robert Jackson, a former city councilman down in Manhattan, is going to challenge Marisol Alcantara, who is a freshman senator. She ran. She joined the IDC immediately. And Jackson announced that he was going to primary her next year in September. And the interesting thing is that when Alcantara won, it was a three-way race. And the third challenger, who actually came in second against her, already has said he will back Robert Jackson rather than run another split race. And so it's the first time in my 23 years here that I've ever written about a state Senate primary 16 months in advance of a state Senate primary. And that just shows you the level of anger and the opportunity that a lot of the Democrats see now. I think the IDC is going to be under intense pressure because of Trump and because of other things to flip. And I'm not sure that the governor is going to stand still this time and let it happen, that where they just keep going with the Republicans.
What do you mean, let it happen? There are those of us who think he encouraged it.
Right, but I don't think, even if that's the case, I think next year the governor's up for re-election. He's got a problem on his left. He's possibly considering a run for president in 2020. He cannot do that if he's being hammered for allowing this situation with the IDC and the Republicans to continue. So you may actually see him for the first time go all out for a Democratic Senate, even though he doesn't want to, but he might have to.
Hmm.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok speaking with Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Supporters from across New York recently gathered in Albany to ask lawmakers to pass the Medical Aid in Dying Act, which would authorize doctors to prescribe lethal medication to terminally ill adults wishing to end their lives. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
More than 100 advocates met with dozens of lawmakers, making their case for medical aid in dying. Former Schenectady County Commissioner of Public Health Services, Dr. David Pratt, is a volunteer with Compassion and Choices, a nonprofit organization committed to improving care and expanding options for the end of life. He says the group met with more than 50 legislators, including the leaders of both the Senate and Assembly.
Joined by family members of individuals who had died, who they believe could have benefited greatly by death with dignity, that is, with medical aid in dying. In addition, we had patients with advanced cancer facing death who hoped that legislation could be passed in order to afford them the opportunity to take control over the final days and weeks of their life.
Former Republican Assemblywoman Janet Dupree of New York's North Country spoke at the event.
In 1994, my dad died from mesothelioma. At the end, he had excruciating pain, and even the care from hospice and prescribed morphine didn't touch that pain. 5 years later, my mom, after a series of strokes, decided to remove the feeding tube, which was all that was keeping her alive. I supported her decision. My family and I sat helplessly watching my mom starve for an agonizing 11 days. I can tell you from experience, forcing a person and their loved ones to live through that kind of torture isn't something we should be proud of as a society. I can't presume that my parents would have chosen to ask for medical aid in dying at the end, but I am certain that they should have had the ability to choose their own destiny.
Later on Tuesday, Republican Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan appeared with Democratic Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie. Both indicated they had reservations about the measure, and supporters of the effort are realistic about their chances before the end of the session in June. Compassion and Choices New York campaign director Corinne Carey.
We know it won't happen this year, but lawmakers need to act to make sure that 2018 becomes the year that New York joins six other states and the District of Columbia in authorizing medical aid in dying.
The Medical Aid in Dying Act stalled last year in the Assembly Health Committee. Currently, it's under consideration by the Health Committee and the Codes Committee.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino has filed two lawsuits alleging the deal announced in January to close Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant skirted state environmental laws. The Republican had intended to file a suit a month ago, but the Democratic Majority County Board of Legislators voted against it. So Astorino is going a different route. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
County Executive Astorino calls the agreement among New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Indian Point parent company Entergy, and Riverkeeper a three-men-in-a-room deal reached prematurely.
The issue here is that the state has clearly failed to uphold the law. They have to do an environmental impact study on the closure of Indian Point before any action was taken. They never did that. They still haven't done that.
State officials previously contended that there was no EIS requirement, given that the decision to close the plant was made by a private entity in an agreement with the state to settle years of litigation and because of economics. Again, Astorino.
You know, this is not a Hail Mary to try to keep the plant open. If the plant's going to close, that's fine. It has to be done in the right way, and it has to be done the legal way, not at the whims of the governor.
Rich Azzapardi is spokesman for Cuomo.
Astorino is wrong on the facts, wrong on the law, and a hypocrite all at the same time. He falsely accuses the state of circumventing a process, and then he does an end run around his own legislature that, in order to file a lawsuit that puts the safety of his own residents at risk. Unbelievable.
An Entergy spokesman declined to comment. Here's Riverkeeper spokesman Cliff Weathers.
The agreement to close Indian Point is fully legal. And it'll protect the health and safety of New Yorkers and the integrity of this Hudson River, and we think the court will find it the same.
In announcing the plant closure in January, President of Entergy Wholesale Commodities Bill Mole said the plant is no longer economically viable, and the decision to shut down Indian Point was Entergy's. Meanwhile, Astorino is bringing the suits both personally and in his capacity as county executive.
The outside legal firm has agreed to do it at no cost to the county. They are going to submit bills, but they understand they may never be paid. And if at some point in the future the county board approves it, then they'll get paid.
Catherine Borgia is Democratic Majority Leader of the County Board of Legislators. She calls Astorino's lawsuits frivolous.
It's a fake piece of political puffery. It is not going to stop Indian Point from closing. It is based on a false premise, which is that the state is responsible for this closing, but it is a private company's decision.
She says efforts should go toward mitigating economic, social, and environmental impacts. Astorino, who ran against Cuomo in 2014, says legal protections are important.
This is not a partisan issue. We should all be standing together to protect the environment, to protect jobs, to protect taxpayers, and to protect ratepayers. And that's what we're going to do, even if I have to do it on my own.
The reason for Astorino's two-lawsuit approach is to address the statute of limitations. His challenge aimed at the closure agreement had to be filed by May 9th, which it was. The second suit, faulting the state's actions in issuing a water quality permit, also was filed May 9th, but does not have to be finalized until August, which will allow others to join the suit. Astorino says the planned closure poses big issues.
Maybe the biggest one on the environment is, what are we going to do with that nuclear cemetery right alongside the banks of the Hudson River? It's going to be there for 60 years to forever, the nuclear waste, making that property uninhabitable.
The agreement calls for the Buchanan-based plant's closure by 2021.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As law enforcement adapts to the growing heroin and addiction crisis, members of local communities are finding new ways to help those in recovery get back on their feet. One group based in upstate New York is distributing bicycles to help people get to work or to meetings and restore a sense of independence. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has more.
It's a sunny morning in mid-May in Glens Falls, the kind of day that would be perfect for a bike ride. But for Chris Collins, today means delivering a bike with his pickup truck.
Back, Jay. All right.
On break from his job as a manager at a cafe at Glens Falls Hospital, Collins and his employee, Max, walk to the truck where a bicycle is ready to be delivered. Collins is a founder of a group called Freedom Machines, which provides bikes to people in recovery.
It provides a means of transportation to start your life back over again.
Collins is in recovery himself, and he found biking is a good way to not only get around, but also relieve stress.
Sometimes in recovery you get overwhelmed with, you know, a lot of people go to a meeting every day and they're going to treatment, and they kind of get stuck in that whole world. And, you know, you have to find a balance in your life, and biking helped me, you know, just getting away from it for a little while, clearing your head, you know, thinking about what you had to do for the day. It's a good stress relief, and I wound up in really good shape, too.
Freedom Machines has been operating for about 6 months, and today Collins and Max are dropping off the group's 100th bicycle, as well as some balloons. It's not a far drive from the hospital to where today's recipient, Cassie Walczak, lives.
I get balloons even? Look at that, Max. I get the 100th bike.
The new bike will replace another in bad shape that Collins helped her get. When she entered recovery, Walczak was without a car and needed a way to get to work. At first, she relied on family and friends. Sober for 21 months, she knows how difficult it can be for somebody just starting to get back on their feet.
It's hard to find help, to find somebody that can get you to where you need to go. And sometimes people feel stressed out having to rely on somebody. So when you have a bike, you know, you don't have to rely on anybody. You feel good about that.
Many people entering recovery are without vehicles, either due to a revoked license or because they cannot afford a car. Collins says Freedom Machines brings bikes to individuals free of charge, but they must show a commitment to recovery. Generally, that means somebody who has been clean for at least 90 days. While the delivery was a short trip on this morning, Collins will bring bikes as far as an hour away. A day earlier, he delivered one to Schenectady. He relies on his small group of volunteers now, but Collins has plans to expand Freedom Machines.
You know, my vision would be to make it into like a co-op, where if you wanted a bike, you came and you worked for, I don't know, 3-4 hours, learned how to fix your bike, and then you got a free bike. So, you know, you're helping out and learning a trade while you're at it, too.
And anyone who gets a bike is also invited to take a group ride with others in recovery.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. As for program number 1720. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.